I'm Mark Purcell, and this is the Book Club at 91.7 WVXU and WMUB. There's a book that really caught my eye due to my own cluttered nature. It's called Mess, One Man's Struggle to Clean Up His House and His Act. It was written by Barry Yorgrau, who's joining me on the phone right now to talk about his own mess. Barry, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Mark, a pleasure to be here.
We'll begin by mess. You know, there's messes and there's mess. And I thought I led a fairly cluttered life until I started reading your book. Explain what your mess was, Barry.
It got to the point in the late aughts where I have an apartment in Queens here in New York. I use it mainly as a writing studio. Around the corner is where I do my living, really, with my girlfriend. But I keep my stuff here, and as I say, a writing studio. I spend most of my time here during the day. And the place, by the aughts, had become not just cluttered with stuff. We travel a lot because she's a food writer internationally, so I bring home souvenirs, mementos, postcards, calendars, what have you. But sometime in the aughts, like 2007 or 8 or so, the place really fell into really bad shape. For some reason, couldn't let go of plastic grocery bags. So the place looked like a tumbleweed set from a Western movie without Roy Rogers in it. And also I hung on to, it's classic, all these empty liquor store boxes, cardboard boxes, figuring I will use them. They're useful. And all that happened was, so often happens with people who get into hoarding issues or clutter issues, you have all this storage material that you're going to use that creates part of the mess. So the place really looked bad. I knew it was bad. And then one day my girlfriend, who had not come over for years, in 2010, I remember, she rang my doorbell. I was shocked that it was her. I wouldn't let her in. And she got a glimpse over my shoulder, and she said, that's it. So I kind of got an ultimatum. Out of that ultimatum, you laugh. Out of that ultimatum came the experiences of decluttering that I put into Mess, One Man's Struggle, which it was to clean up his house and his act.
I would say there's always a strong woman behind it, and I love your portrayal of Cosima, Prunella, Medea. You have many names for her, but you change the names to protect the innocents in your book, Mess, right?
Exactly, and I had fun with it. And you, as a classical music person, know that I wanted to call her at first Brunhilde. I mean, she looks nothing like a Brunhilde, but just she has a strong personality. So, but then we decided that maybe a little too Wagnerian. So we came with Cosima, which is a little more romantic.
Well, it's fun how her name also evolves throughout your book, Mess. And this mess, you distinguish and spend a good portion of the first part of the book distinguishing between what is clutter and what is hoarding. Can you explain the difference?
Right. I will, with pleasure, because I think it's a really important one. They figure they're probably between 4 or 5 million to up to 16 million people in America who have hoarding issues and extreme clutter issues. The difference is this, is that people who clutter can get into real problems, but they can bring themselves to let go of things. It might be something of a struggle, but they will do it, whereas people who hoard have tremendous, tremendous problems just letting go of something. Now, in the DSM, the manual that the psychology community uses to figure out what pathologies are going on with people, a slightly clumsy and unreliable thing, but still, they list first, not just for hoarding disorder, it's called, not just accumulation, which, excessive accumulation, which is true. But the number one now thing is people's inability to let go. And if you can be brought to let go, then you really are not, you have less of a hoarding issue than people who hoard really, who just have the damnedest time in the world just letting go of anything.
Well, I have to say I am very sympathetic and empathetic as I was reading Mess because I have a tendency to collect things. And I'm not talking like a butterfly collection or a stamp collection, but something that I might use in the future. So, you know, yes, I have that same hard time letting go of something. Well, where does it tilt and become certifiable, I guess you could say, Barry?
Well, let's not say certifiable because, those are a strong... I mean,
oh, true,
the line
true.
Gets kind of blurred. Essentially, if you can live your life without being really distressed. In other words, where you cannot, for instance, get out the door, or where you cannot, out of shame, have people over, or to really impact your relationship, then you have a problem. If you're just someone who's cluttered, disorderly, but really enjoys things, then it's just an issue of how you feel about it. If you want to clean up, go for it. If you don't want to clean up, you know, do what you will. What I discovered in doing this book, because I set up from the ultimate of my girlfriend, I decided to declutter, and then I also wanted to explore the wider world of hoarding and clutter. So I went to Clutters Anonymous groups. As a sufferer and as a researcher, I went to some peer groups, which were great. I spoke to leading psychologists, which was really interesting. I spoke to some wild old geezers who were professional extreme declutterers. I visited the UK's most extreme hoarder at his unbelievable place in England. And I also did some rummaging in my own family history and discovered kind of surprising and jolting stuff, part of the psychological decluttering. But I will say this, what I finally came to by the end, and I think my place is functionally decluttered. I have people in here. The New York Times came over, took photos of it, said, oh, it looks like a neat little museum, sort of, like a curiosity shop. Indeed. Some people, it becomes eventually a matter, unless it's really, really disabling your life. It's a question of personal, it's just a matter of what's your taste. Some people really like having a lot of objects around. Some people are really, more than other people, some people are really sentimental more than other people. Some people see use in things more than other people. Some people can tolerate disorder more than other people. And it's just a question of personal style.
Barry Yorkraub, he is the author of Mess, One Man's Struggle to Clean Up His House and His Act. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And you said something that kind of resonates with me right there, Barry, when you talk about how some people like having objects around them. And I know from growing up with my father, and now as I can observe, my own lifestyle, I see a lot of my father in the way my garage looks or the way my tool chest is. How much are we influenced by family? Because you do talk about that in your book, Mess.
Well, it depends who you talk to. A lot of people say it's there's a. They use a cute term, genetic proclivity, which is a shading away from saying it's genetically caused, because they had to back away from it. But there seems to be some play of inheritance, and some play in genetic, and some play in modeling. Yeah, in other words, copying behavior, because you grew up around that. A lot of hoarders, and I would venture probably people with clutter issues, but a lot of hoarders, particularly, it runs in a family. And then you have people who, the children of hoarders who grow up. There's a category for them, just as you have children of alcoholics, you have children of hoarders who are very different from their parents. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, one psychologist told me, have a lot of anger and resentment issues, because like people who have, say, an alcoholic father or mother, where you feel mom likes the bottle more than she likes me, people with hoarding issues and such, their children tend to be they get very angry at their parents, because their parents really deprive them of a kind of a social life, like the parents often don't want people to come over, and they feel that the parent is more attached to the object than they are to their kids. So these are complicated and deeply felt issues. To handle them really takes patience, and as I came to discover doing my book, really takes courage. People who have problems with this stuff and want to change, it's not easy. It takes a while, and it takes courage, and it takes, as a presidential candidate now says, it takes a village, and indeed it does. If anybody has these problems and they want to do something about it, I strongly urge them to get involved with another person and another group, because doing it alone is like having yourself for a lawyer, having someone showing up in court with him, it ain't going to work.
I was very much interested as I was reading Mess about your conversation about the objects themselves. For you, a lot of the objects you mentioned, postcards and souvenirs and trinkets from travels, those objects are memories. And that was something I hadn't thought about, that I, you know, some of the objects that I enjoy having around me, some are memories or memory provoking. Others, you know, carry a different type of emotion. Uh-huh. But that's really part of what happens when you're collecting clutter.
It is. And for me, very strongly, and for other people, not everyone, but for other people, the objects really are like a condensed version of the memory. So that they're like a button that you push that suddenly lights up a screen and the memories come back. And so when we travel a lot, when I bring back these things, when I see an object, I see a certain postcard, I see a soccer scarf I get. I'm standing here, I collect soccer scarves when we go around the world. And I mean, not seriously, but I like bringing occasionally one home. And when I see it, I remember the day... I remember when I bought it. I remember where I was when I bought it. I remember the emotions. It all comes back to me like a little memory theater. Mm-hmm. And for certain people, that's very exciting to them, or that's the way their memory works. What was interesting for me is I'm very sentimental about objects. I really attach memories to them. When I was interviewing the world's most extreme, the UK's most extreme hoarder, as he's called, and living in this amazing conditions, they were just astounding. I said to him, looking at all the stuff he had, I said, "So, are you very sentimental about all this stuff? Is that what it's for?" He said, "No." I said, "You aren't?" He said, "No, because I think it's, for me, it's there because it's archivally useful. I would like to be able to consult it." But that reflects the reason regular folk who don't have these issues hang on to things, because you say, "Oh, this might be useful." You were just saying, "Oh, this might be useful." Mm-hmm. So for this guy, it wasn't sentiment, Richard Wallace, a delightful guy. It was supposed usefulness.
Well, very thought-provoking as I followed your story in Mess, One Man's Struggle to Clean Up His House and His Act, and it made me reassess my own clutter. But it also made me realize that there's a lot of fascination with the clutter and hoarding, and especially hoarders, with TV shows about it. Why is society so fascinated by hoarding?
That's an interesting question. It is a freak show. I mean, the hoarding. I say that straightforwardly. I really can barely bring myself to watch them. I've watched a little bit. There was a documentary on this Richard Wallace hoarder guy in UK you can find, which was actually much more humane. But most of the time, these shows are freak fests, and what they're looking to do is to get the shriek point where someone with a moldy pile of garbage is screaming, "Don't throw it away, don't throw it away." And there's some way, it's kind of like a horror movie or something. I know one guy who's confessed to being anal retentive, you know, very tidy and whatever, who says he watches this like, as it were, pornography. You know, it's just kind of like this extreme situation. It's also a way of distancing yourself from things. I mean, I'll tell you one thing that's worth thinking about, and Oprah Magazine has been very kind to me, gave me a lovely review in about the book and do really great things. And Oprah had these some experts on her show. And on the website that she has, you see I did a screenshot. You see the website says Dr. so-and-so and so-and-so is here talking about this. These are the warning signs for hoarding, blah, blah, blah. You can do blah, blah. And there's a pop-up ad. And the pop-up ad says, "Splurge on furnishing, get as much as, you know what I mean?" So this double message.
You're
and
right.
I don't single out Oprah. I just point this out, that this is in the culture, this acquire, acquire, acquire. So it's kind of like saying drink, 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 but drink responsibly. Drink, 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 but drink, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's you know, or drink responsibly, but here you get a case of blah, blah, you know what I mean? So there's something about this consumer culture we live in that kind of pumps this stuff up. And it's really, I think it's really something worth thinking about.
Barry Yorgrau, author of One Man's Struggle to Clean Up His House and His Act, the book Mess. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. Barry, thanks for being on the Book Club at 91.7.
Mark, it was a pleasure.